So thank you very much, Cheryl. I just want to say that I'm not here alone tonight. I am sitting here with John Mark Stroud, Jacqueline Eckert, and Daphne, I don't know your last name.
Blunk.
Daphne Blunk, and of course, Jamie. So what I'm going to do tonight is I am going to go ahead and share the quote from the Seven Steps to Awakening, and I will go ahead and share my journal entry from that quote. But then I think we're just going to have a discussion happen. So it's going to be a little different tonight than it usually is. I will go ahead and start in the way that I always start, which is by playing a song. Maybe I'll let John Mark pick out the song tonight.
Oh, cool.
Okay, here you go. Here's my little mouse. You can scroll. Whoops, don't download now. There we go.
Oh, that one too. I see it. Would you like to rock a little bit?
Here we go.
You know love is a mystery.
Oh, yeah.
That'll never be explained.
Oh, yeah.
But you know I've got this deep, deep feeling. Well, this one truth will never change. If you really want to know what love is, you know you got to feel the pain. If you want to grow a garden out on a dry and dusty plain, you're gonna need to plant the seed. You're gonna need the sunshine. You're gonna need the rain. When you're talking about love, you know that one and the same.
Do it, Steve.
All right, everyone. So hello. I see a few of y'all popped into the room. Lynn and Doreen and Joanne have popped into the room. Of course, Lynn and Doreen were with us at the retreat, so it's nice to see y'all again. As I mentioned, tonight is going to be a little different because I'm not alone. We have John Mark Stroud here, Jacqueline Eckert here, and Daphne Blunk here. So what I'm going to do is introduce the topic which will be from the Seven Steps to Awakening. And then we'll just let a discussion happen and we'll just go wherever it goes. So let me share with you. Hello, Jamie, my love. Hello. So let me share with you the quote for tonight. This is quote 737. When the mind abandons its conditioning, the objects lose their temptation. Again, the quote is, when the mind abandons its conditioning, the objects lose their temptation. And, you know, one thing that might be kind of interesting to look at is, you know, our idea of what an object is as we look at this. But let me just go ahead and read. Hey, Kathy. Let me just go ahead and read what's in the journal. I wrote this journal entry, let's see, June 20th, 2013, while contemplating quote 737. And this is the journal entry. The idea that letting go of ego is hard is a false idea. There is a... We already have laughter here. There is a period of effort required. Effort is required to reverse habitual conditioning. Once conditioning is changed, new corrective conditioning comes into place. Let corrective conditioning complete the job of letting go of ego. Remain aware enough to allow this process without negative interference.
Wow, you know what jumped out at me?
No, but you go right ahead.
That first line of your contemplation, that letting go of the ego, the idea that letting go of the ego is hard, that's a false idea. But then the next line, there's a period of effort required.
Yeah.
But oftentimes we confuse effort and hardness as though they're the same things. How hard is effort if it's for your liberation?
Good question.
That effort, in my case, was joyful.
Well, and what I'm thinking of as you're speaking is like if somebody wants to, you know, like a little boy who wants to learn to play baseball.
Where's the effort?
Yeah, I mean, he has to go out there and practice. You can call that effort, right? But like you said, it's joyful. It's not
happy
hard.
Learner.
Happy learner. Of
a
course.
Playful way to awakening. Okay. Joyful path to awakening. It's only the ego that's going to lead us through that striving and effort associated with the belief that it's hard and that pain and suffering are somehow helpful.
Okay, we learned that lesson.
Got it.
No, I think today we were listening to John Mark at the retreat, and he talked a lot about joy. And you all know that I have talked here about, of course, the Loving All method, you know, that Michael Langford teaches. We also have talked about Chapter 15 of The Untethered Soul, which is unconditional happiness as a path to awakening.
Woo!
So let's just talk about that for a minute. And if any of you guys want to chime in, please do, all right? But let's just talk about this for a minute, because I think people have trouble with joy. You know that. People have trouble with happiness as a path of awakening. You know, because what if something sucks? You know, like my dog gets hit by a car.
Yeah, that's a bitch.
That's a bitch. So how do you practice joy when your dog gets hit by a car, John Mark?
Well, the first thing I discovered was that I had no idea what joy was. I had a robust database in my being of what joy was, and it was deeply attached to ideas, beliefs, and perceptions that joy was things going my way. Or that joy was things that met my criteria of what I wanted or what felt good. And then when I investigated that more deeply, I found out that I was joyful about being righteous sometimes, because in my estimation, being right felt good. So the premise that is just like Yeshua asked us without, we don't know what love is, I was willing to say, I don't have any idea what joy is. And what I discovered in letting go of my ideas of joy, rather than trying
to effort and strive with my thinking mind to make unjoyful things, like a dog being hit by the car, joyful, which has no intrinsic joy to it, at least from a physical perspective. But what I discovered about the joy of spirit in its freedom to experience all things, that's where the real joy is.
Okay, so the joy then is in allowing myself to mourn.
Allowing yourself to mourn, allowing yourself to cry, allowing yourself to celebrate, allowing yourself to enjoy, all those things. It's the freedom of the soul to experience all things in innocence.
All right, so let me ask you this question. Let's look at what we're contemplating here. So the idea that letting go of ego is hard is a false idea. There is a period of effort required. So what is the effort in learning to be joyful?
So imagine there's a splinter in your shoe, which I just had.
Yeah.
There's effort to relieve the discomfort. Was that hard or joyful?
Mm. Wow.
And a false idea in your mind is no different than that splinter in my foot. I took great joy in relieving my suffering.
So it did take a little bit of effort.
Sure, but was I like, you know, wore out taking the splinter out of my foot? No, I was glad to do it. There's a beautiful parable about a master teaching a student about allowance. So he sends the student on a journey and says, learn allowance. Like, you know, a mile down the road, the student gets a pebble in his shoe. So the student says, I'm going to learn allowance, and walks and walks and walks and walks and walks and walks on that pebble until he can't feel the pebble anymore.
So that's kind of the dormant mentality.
And he comes back to the master and tells the master, I've learned allowance. Look, I don't even feel this pebble in my shoe. I've learned allowance. I was with the pain. I allowed, I allowed, I allowed. And the master just laughed. And he said, now you don't even know. Because he didn't know that he had rendered it unconscious. Mm-hmm. Rather than allowing, take my shoe off and take the pebble out. Take the shortest path to freedom from it. So how much effort is there in that? I found that to be very joyful. Was it always comfortable? Absolutely not.
Okay, I want to stop you there. I think that this is where people get confused. Is they, like you said, you had to admit you didn't know what joy was, but people think joy is a certain feeling.
Oh, no, no, no. Joy is not an emotional state of being. Joy is the intrinsic, subtle recognition of my simple existence.
Say that again, please, if you can.
Joy is the intrinsic and simple awareness of my existence. And that within my existence, I can experience an infinity of things safely, with no harm and no consequence.
All right, and Kathy has written that in the room. Joy is the intrinsic and simple awareness of my existence. So,
and that existence is not, I'm not referring to my body as that existence.
Business.
The body is an experience, one of the joyful experiences that arises within that field of intrinsic joy, the freedom of the soul to experience anything.
Right. Right. Like yesterday, Ron and I went hiking, and in a way we got lost. And so the hike ended up being twice as long as we thought it would be, and we loved it, right? A lot of people maybe would not have loved it because it wasn't supposed to happen this way.
Mm. Yeah.
Yeah. So that's just enjoying existence.
Yeah, the freedom to experience.
Yeah, right now this is what's happening, you know, and in fact, to me, life becomes an adventure if you're willing to be that open. Life is just an adventure. It is just fun. You don't know what's going to happen next. You're exploring, you know, whatever's going to occur. You're exploring this beingness, this being a human, this life, this story. Joy is the intrinsic and simple awareness of my existence. Yes, Kathy has the word curious there, which has been the word that's been occurring to her over and over again lately. Joy is the intrinsic and simple awareness of my existence. being with what is. So let's look back at the journal entry. The idea that letting go of ego is hard is a false idea. There is a period of effort required. And then it says, effort is required to reverse habitual conditioning. So habitual conditioning, then, is things like, it's not supposed to be this way.
Or the conditioning that joy looks a certain way, as defined by the body mind.
Therefore, when my dog gets hit by a car, if I'm sad, I'm a failure.
Of course, and you're not a good course student either. You clearly aren't getting it. But yet, you can be with that experience in its grief, in its mourning, in its grotesqueness, but recognize that from your eternal self, from that simple ability to experience, you are experiencing a miracle. You are experiencing something that none of us can explain how it even happens. It's the freedom of the soul to know that it is free in all experiences, and therefore to finally have permission to have the experience fully. And that comes with the grief, the grotesqueness, the ecstasy, whatever the case may be.
Yeah, you reminded me of that song, Everything's a Miracle. There's a line in that song when he says, the greatest miracle is that anything is here at all.
Yes. And when we stop bifurcating artificially within our thinking mind, goods and bads, rights and wrongs, which gets back to the thing in the book that you read, when we remove the conditioning of objects, then the temptations stop. Because we stop operating from the mind that's objectifying not just the object, but placing its value and meaning to the body upon those objects.
Yeah, and again, the quote that he just referred to, it's from the Yoga Vasistha. When the mind abandons its conditioning, the objects lose their temptation. Yeah, Kathy had a question. I had the same question, but I forgot very quickly. But she brought it back. What does bifurcating mean?
Bifurcating is when that's the mind creating separation. Mm. It's taking something and splitting it into good or bad, right or wrong, happy or sad, experiences you want, experiences you don't want, what's a miracle, what's not, all that crazy kind of stuff.
Well,
so that's the action of the mind splitting something artificially by its own assessment. Because experience is just experience. But when the labels come, that's the action of the bifurcation.
So it's the belief that I'm either the body or spirit, but not both.
Well, that's one example of bifurcation, yes.
Bifurcation.
It's a legal term.
Yeah, is it a legal term?
Yeah.
Ah. So I'll give an example. When Cindy had her, how many is five? Five is like quintuple. She had a five bypass, heart bypass.
Oh, really?
Wow.
So here's a traditional worldly event where both of us could, and you might expect, have all the human emotion associated with that. But to our incredible joy and surprise, we didn't experience fear. I had one moment of it when she came out of the operating room and her soul had not returned to the body yet. And the body was lifeless and I couldn't locate her in consciousness. She was in a state beyond what I was able to access at that time. So I had a temptation. Oh, she's chosen to go. And I felt the fear of the potential loss. But we experienced great joy and great happiness because we recognized that we were safe to have the experience and that the outcome of the experience wasn't the point. The outcome is never the point. It's the richness of the experience itself.
Yeah,
it was really joyful.
This is what, for those of you who read NTI, this is what NTI 2 Timothy is all about. NTI 2 Timothy says that what we came here for was experience. And so we cannot awaken to our true self through repressing experience when experience was our purpose to come. That's what we wanted. That because we chose experience, we must be willing to experience. And only through being willing to experience can we remember our true self. Yeah, absolutely. And, you know, what happens, of course, when you're willing to experience things, really, really experience them, is that you notice they move through something. right? The fear comes, the fear is here, the fear goes. The guilt comes, the guilt's here, the guilt goes. The jealousy comes, the jealousy's here, the jealousy goes. And if you allow yourself just to experience it, at least what happened for me, is you start to notice, wait a minute, there's something here that these experiences are moving through.
And can I ask you a question?
Yes.
When you recognize that and you rest in that, isn't there a subtle joy at the ability to have that experience, but it not touch you?
Oh, absolutely. In fact, what I find, even though obviously there are still other emotions that arise, what I find now is that the primary emotion, in other words, the default emotion is joy.
Yeah, but it's almost emotionless. It's still.
Yes.
It doesn't move.
You called it causeless happiness.
Yeah.
Right? It's the default. And in fact, Ramana Maharshi said that's our nature. Happiness is our nature. Right? So that's the happiness. That's the joy that's felt. It's felt there, and it remains felt there unless the mind makes a judgment and chooses something else.
And when the mind made judgments and chose definitions of joy, the mind didn't realize that it was abandoning its own freedom in the process and creating its own suffering.
Yeah. Cosmos happiness, Kathy says. So we have had a few more people come into the room. It's nice to see you all. It's great to be back here with Awakening Together. Jackie's here. Jackie was at the retreat. Nancy's also here. She wasn't able to be at the retreat this time. But yeah, we have some more people popping in, so that's a lot of fun. Let's look at this journal entry again. This is our fodder for our discussion tonight.
And it's rich, too.
Yeah, well, that's, I sit here.
Nice contemplation.
This is what I do on Sunday nights, is I sit here and I usually spend about an hour talking about one quote and one journal entry, but typically by myself, so it's kind of fun to do it with someone else.
Yeah, thanks for letting us join.
Yeah, this is what I do. So here we go. The idea that letting go of ego is hard is a false idea. There is a period of effort required. Effort is required to reverse habitual conditioning. Once conditioning is changed, new corrective conditioning comes into place. And I can tell you what this meant to me. For example, the conditioning used to be, this shouldn't be this way, right? Or something like that.
I gotta do something.
Yes. And then the new conditioning that came in was more of an acceptance, or a resting, or a being.
Or a radical curiosity.
These are new types of, I called them conditioning. I just had to pick a word. But they replace the old. Mm-hmm. Right? They come in. They're the new way of experiencing automatically the same things that used to be experienced with judgment. Right? Yeah.
With resistance.
Absolutely. So,
One of the cool things is when the mind lets go in that way, and then you can be with the experience just in its pure feeling essence without the labels of, oh, this feels guilt, this feels shame, because then that activates all of the associated judgment. When you're just with the feelings that come through, then you don't activate all the judgments that then trigger all the we should need to fix this. So you just get down to kind of the what I call the pure experience. Mm-hmm. Experiencing your experience without having it labeled and therefore tainting the experience through the judgments inherent in all the labeling. So you just experience, I'm having this feeling.
Yes.
What is this feeling? And you just feel it with great curiosity. And as you said, it comes and it goes.
Yes.
So oftentimes what I've discovered in working with others is a feeling will come. That feeling may be a little unfamiliar and the mind immediately goes, I feel fear. So you end up chasing the fear that the mind has perceived. And maybe there's a jewel just in that feeling that's a little different. You see what I mean? So the mind and its labeling is that distraction away from the feeling communion with whatever's there, and then takes you on a rabbit chase.
Right.
rather than being with that feeling. So oftentimes when I'm with someone, if there's an inquiry and they say, well, I feel fear. Well, that's the mind's labeling. What do you really feel? Wow. Well, I feel kind of a contraction in my stomach. Well, great. Let's just feel that contraction in the stomach. And then we begin to get real with the experience, not just chasing the mind's interpretation of it. And then we ask them, just feel that feeling. Would it be okay to just feel this feeling? Well, yeah, I can feel that feeling a little bit. That's okay. You see what I mean? So we kind of take the mind with it, its conditioning out of it, and just get to the experience that's happening. And when we feel the experience, oftentimes, all that needs to happen is that you actually feel it in its pure essence, and then it goes.
Well, and again, what happens, at least again from my experience, what happens as you feel these feelings that, you know, I remember when the mind was telling me that the fear was going to kill me. Right?
Yeah.
A lot of people think
right?
that if they really feel the feeling, they'll lose control.
Yeah, well, for me,
now, Jim had deeply. That during the play shop. Remember,
oh,
he was, we were talking, well, you weren't there, so when you
I
were
was
gone.
Out being
yeah,
up,
yeah he was fearing feeling feelings, so he was already in fear about feelings that were he wasn't actually feeling.
Yeah. Yeah, so I remember, you know, the mind really told me, because, you know, I went through some intense fear, because I think prior to starting the spiritual path, I was really good at repression. I perceived myself.
No, you weren't.
I was really good.
Come on.
Better than some people, truly.
Yeah, but
I really
suspect
you weren't only
good at repression, you were good at denying the repression.
Denying the repression, exactly. So,
yeah.
So I perceived
well done,
myself.
My
I was really good at it.
Yeah.
So I perceived myself as a happy person. So what happened when I opened myself up to healing is all of these feelings came up that I had never felt before, because I was so good at repressing them. And like I had, you know, there are people who live with intense fear, live with intense guilt, live with intense unworthiness. I hadn't. So when these things started coming up, there really was this feeling that the fear especially was going to kill me. But then there was this other little thought. I was right behind this ear here that would say, no, it won't. Just be with it. Just be with it. So I was just with the fear that was going to kill me, right? And as I was just with it, and I let it come, and I let it get as big as it wanted to get, and then it went, what I learned was it couldn't kill me.
Shazam!
Shazam! That's an important lesson, and you can't learn that lesson if you believe it's going to kill you and you never allow it to come and get as big as it's going to get. The only way to learn that you are invulnerable is to allow this stuff to happen.
And be bigger than every temporary experience.
You can't help but be bigger than every temporary experience.
But you need to discover
but
that
you
that's
need to
true.
Discover for yourself.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And the discovery that I have had to this date is only worth nothing. Because I don't know what may come tomorrow that may invite me into an even deeper abiding presence.
I know.
Maybe it's the dog getting run over. Who knows? But something will come, and I don't fear that. I welcome whatever will come that will reveal more deeply to me my nature to be present with all things and not lose that simple, intrinsic joy of my existence.
Yeah.
Because nothing changes my existence. Nothing changes
my nature. Nothing. In fact, I couldn't experience extreme fear if I wasn't awareness. If I wasn't that awareness, that life, that isness, that base has to be there for me to experience anything.
Yeah, well, even in, it's still there, even in all your denial and repression
Absolutely.
Of your denial.
Absolutely. It's the one thing that doesn't change, doesn't go away, is always present, always me, right? Always what I am, regardless of everything else.
And that never costs you anything, did it?
No.
It just is. You don't get more of it through effort. You don't get less
no.
of it through denial.
No.
How about that?
It's amazing.
Wow, I think it might have been called a bestowal.
But you can become more aware of it.
Oh, and that's a rich journey, isn't it? That's the fun of self-discovery.
Yeah, I have a little rock over there, a little heart-shaped rock that Michael Langford gave me. Do you see it? Is it still over there?
Yes, it is.
Yeah. And when he gave me that rock, what he said was he went back and forth from his house to the end of his driveway for 17 years and didn't notice this rock laying there. And finally, you know, one day he looks down, he sees this heart rock and he picks it up. But he gave it to me because he said what it represents is that people live their entire lives and never notice awareness, never notice the true self. Just like he walked past this rock for 17 years before he found it. So what this rock is a symbol of is the remembrance, the choice, or the awareness to pay attention to awareness, to notice what you are. That's what this is all about.
To live in the heart. So
to live in the heart. That's how Nirmala refers to it, living in the heart, absolutely. And also Ramana Maharshi refers to it as living in the heart or abiding as the self. Yeah.
Right. A heart that never beats.
A heart that never beats.
Isn't that fun?
Yeah, and therefore it can't stop beating.
Yeah.
So, let's see. So, once conditioning is changed, new corrective conditioning comes into place. And then, let correct...
Can I speak on that point a minute?
You may.
So, that corrective conditioning may initially come with action within the mind.
For example,
new different thoughts, rather than something is wrong here, I choose to allow all things.
Yes.
So some of those corrective conditioning will first begin within the mind itself.
Yes.
Because at this stage, the mind hasn't realized awareness very deeply. So it's keen to recondition itself in a way that it perceives will get it happiness. So that initial stage of that reconditioning oftentimes does still happen within thought. And that's really what a lot of the Course in Miracle lessons are about, that replace one thought with another.
Yes.
So it can begin there, but the beauty and the danger can come at that stage because then we can become conditioned to the new corrective conditioning, which is just another happier trap. It's kind of the happy dream because we haven't turned... We haven't fully made the turn towards awareness, but we're now more committed to the new thought conditioning than we were to the old. And
okay.
And that can be a...
So let me ask you a question. Let's say someone is making that mistake. What symptoms are there of making that mistake? Do you know?
Well, oftentimes they'll need to rationalize and explain to themselves. They'll need to place meaning on things to spiritualize it.
Okay.
They'll be using their corrective conditioning to look at it from another point of view. And rather than simply seeing it as an innocent experience, they'll put a spiritual ribbon around it and give it this whole big spiritual story.
So, for example, I can accept that my dog was hit by a car because there is no death.
Yes. Or, you know, it's some kind of karmic balancing and you're okay with it. So there'll be justifications within it. There'll be the need to justify to someone else, let's say you have this big, beautiful bruise on your knee.
I love my bruise.
Yeah, from your hike yesterday.
Yeah.
So you'll need to give some spiritual justification for why that existence is okay and not real.
Not
so they'll still be a need to project meaning out and get someone else to share it.
Yeah, it's funny because I have this really big bruise. And I really love this bruise. I'm not kidding when I say that. It sounds crazy, but I really love this bruise because I haven't had a bruise in so many years. That's not why I love it. It's just that I've never looked at the art within the bruise. Does that make sense?
Yeah, well, we'll see how it changes tomorrow.
Yeah,
it's like living
different.
Art.
It will be different. And so, when I took my pants off and saw that bruise, my reaction was literally, wow! It's so big and so dark, and I really like my bruise, but I will let it pass. I'm not gonna cling to my bruise.
So the symptom, if the mind's still having to use thinking to spiritualize the experience even after it's passed, and then share about it or get someone else to come on board, that's still the mind in its projection.
Yes.
Because it's not gotten innocence within itself. It's looking for an outside validation from another spiritual friend who will only see my truth.
And that doesn't have to be just about bad things either, right?
Oh, no, not at all.
Right.
Not at all. Sometimes some of the most difficult things to look at are, you know, your mystical experiences or your revelations.
Yes.
And you get to run around with your banner to show those off.
Right.
That can be that same stage because that's still the reconditioned mind trying to prove that it's been reconditioned and trying to prove that it's now right or it's holy or whatever.
That's what I call the spiritual ego.
Yeah.
Yeah, because, you know, it's still a very strong sense of self, a very strong sense of me, but it's all spirit. It has to act spiritual. But that gets painful, too.
Of yeah. course it does.
Because if I'm pissed off that someone else's spiritual ego, it's usually mirroring something of my own and the energies that I'm... would also recognize.
Well, yeah, and if my spiritual ego is my identity, then when I'm around you guys, I have to act.
Spiritual.
I can't just be.
Yeah.
Right? Yeah. I have to act, and that acting hurts. It hurts. In fact, one of the things I was commenting about at the Awakening Together retreat, Doreen led us in ecstatic dance, a couple of different, you know, led us in ecstatic laughter. She led us in ecstatic dance. And one of the things she kept emphasizing was to just be authentic. You know, so if you didn't feel to move, don't move. If you feel to move in a certain way, feel to move, you know, move in that way. But also watch the mind wanting to say, ooh, Jacqueline's looking at me right now. I wonder what she yeah. thinks.
Or the mind, well, what's authentic?
Or what's authentic?
Oh, right.
I didn't have that problem.
What's authentic for yeah. me?
I didn't have that problem. I can feel, to me, authentic to me is just being.
Yeah.
Being absolutely natural in the moment, regardless of, without thoughts about outside approval or even my own approval. That's authentic.
Yeah.
Right? That's authentic.
So that reconditioning stage, and it's really prevalent within the Course in Miracles community that we think that's the end of the journey. And we spiritualize that and actually hold on to those reconditioned things with more they're my salvation veracity than we did with the previous stuff.
Yeah.
But there's still, that's still so much effort within the mind needing to repeat course lessons in your mind ceaselessly or act spiritual or all that stuff, the ease hasn't come. The ease right. of simply being,
simply
that
being.
Intrinsic, simple, I call it spacious presence, you call it awareness, whatever, that...
They're just words.
Yeah, that recognition hasn't come, and that rest is what the mind really wants. But it thinks it will get it through this new reconditioned pattern, and it can be even more devoted to that than it might have been to its fear before. And that can even be a harder thing to get the mind to let go
Well,
of.
As I'm listening to you, because I'm really listening, and so as I'm listening to you, I can imagine the pain. I mean, I can just
of course.
Feel it as I listen. Yeah.
It's not the ease of being and the true joy. It's a, I call it a faux enlightenment.
Faux. Yeah.
I mean, there has been, healing has certainly happened. There has been correction. And those are all truly real and authentic things. But there's a tendency to just stay with the reconditioned state. And that may be what he means by the happy dream. Because it is a much better
place. Oh, I don't think so.
You don't?
No.
You don't think
well,
the
reason
dream?
I don't think that would be the happy dream is because I can, because of the pain. How can it be the happy dream if I'm in pain, acting, pretending to be spiritual, struggling?
Because
be
we
that.
Can still be really good at repressing that in that stage. Denying
yeah, I still don't think that would be the happy dream.
Okay.
I think, no, you know, I think the happy dream is being at the point that the Hindus call sattvic, which is being at the point where there's enough healing that has occurred that I am genuinely open, genuinely being, genuinely accepting, but still think I'm me.
Ah.
But it's easy.
Yeah.
Because of all of the things that have let go, the one thing that hasn't been let go is the me.
Yeah, into the mystery.
And that would, yeah, that would be exactly. So I think, I mean, I could be wrong, but that's what I interpret the happy dream as, because it is a very, easeful life rather than a painful life. Yeah, so... All right, posing, Kathy says, as we're talking, when we're talking about the faux enlightenment and the staying with the reconditioned state.
But, you know, there's a great incentive within many spiritual communities to pose together.
Yeah.
And wink, wink at each other and go, you know, be affirmed in that.
Yeah, well, that's why I tell people not to be spiritual.
Yeah, well, what is that, by the way? What if being spiritual is just experiencing?
Yeah.
Everything is spiritual. You know, not the fact that you come home and say, I don't watch the news anymore.
Okay, I do. I watch the news. When I'm home, I watch the news every day. I didn't think about it this week.
Yeah, I check in the news all the time because I'm really curious.
I usually watch the news at lunchtime. I sit down with my lunch and watch the news. That's my primary time to watch it.
Yeah, it gives me the opportunity to feel the larger movements in consciousness.
Yeah.
That's the way I experience those.
And to know the current characters in the center of the play.
Mm-hmm.
Right? That's important too.
Yeah, who's exited stage left and who's just come on.
That's right. Absolutely. And we have some magnificent characters now.
Oh, yes. Rich,
and
rich.
So well.
Rich, this is.
Yeah, yeah. Okay, we have a lot more people that
have
been
joining. But, you know, one of the things that kind of arises from that, you know, intrinsic joy of simply being, that simple joy, is a profound appreciation for the vast creativity.
Hmm.
The just, oh my God, I never would have thought to play it that way. And you see yourself expressing in all these others, and you're so grateful. I call it infinitude because it's no longer the result of an action, but you see freedom being expressed in so many creative ways. And you're just, it's just so exciting.
Well, you know, that's what this is about here. Love is giving through spirit to spirit that which spirit requests. This is all about the interconnected freedom that's making everything happen all of the time. You mentioned when we were at the retreat that love was redefined for you as freedom.
Mm-hmm.
It was for me too. And for me, it's when I was writing. So it happened in NTI Acts chapter 10. But that's exactly what it was about. And when I started to see the freedom in everything, that also helped me let go of the judgment. Because I began to see, at that time I still used the language Son of God, I began to see everyone and everything as the Son of God, and the Son of God had absolute freedom to create anything it wanted to create. And in fact, I had this wonderful experience where it was kind of like a vision. I used to have a lot of visions. It was a primary learning device for me at one time. So I had this vision where the Holy Spirit took me to a war scene where I think, you know, you remember this?
Yes,
where bombs had just, planes had just driven over and dropped bombs, and it was like in a city, and they had just left. So, you know, there were fires burning, there were buildings that were crushed, there were people screaming, crying, dead bodies, maimed bodies, mothers looking for their children, just horrible, like just the worst moment that you can imagine. And I felt that like a human while I was looking at that. But then we passed through, I guess I'll call it a veil. I didn't see anything, but we passed through form into formlessness. And here there was nothing to see. But what I felt in this was Holy Spirit's gratitude for what we had just seen. And it wasn't really the gratitude for the scene itself. It was the gratitude for the creativity and the freedom.
And appreciation.
That would allow even that.
Mm-hmm.
Like, and this is when I learned that there's no line. Up until then, I thought there was a line. Like, freedom was okay up to this line.
But you don't cross
it. But you don't cross that line.
Then there must be sin over there.
Over there. That's exactly. And obviously, this war scene would be crossing the line.
Oh.
But what I felt was, no, there was no line. And in fact, the gratitude, the love was for the creativeness that we are, regardless of what we choose to do with it.
Beautiful. Can I ask you a question?
Yeah.
So you mentioned visions being a primary learning source at a stage.
Yes.
I would assume that's in that reconditioned stage.
Yes.
But then it started to no longer be as useful.
Yes.
I suspect maybe during that time you might have felt a, why am I not getting my regular dose of vision?
Believe it or not, I didn't.
Oh, well, but that would be one of those where there's holding on to the recondition.
Yeah, no, I've always...
Because I did. I did.
Did you?
Yeah, I was like, what happened to my damn vision machine? You know, come on, I used to be like, be able to turn the channel and boom, there it was.
Well, let me see. I had that feeling once. Let me see if it wasn't about the visions going away. But let me see if I can find when that feeling happened. I think that, you know, because I didn't really feel it specifically, of course, when the visions went away. And when the visions went away, I was still writing. scribing was still happening. And then the scribing went away, and I explained to you how I was told about the resistor, the doubter, and the biting, and that that needed to happen. So when the scribing needed to go away, that needed to happen. And so when that went away, I was fine with that too. But I think there was a period, maybe even a few years after that, where there had been this period of time without any dramatic spiritual experiences.
Yeah.
That I went
through. Just your human.
Just my humanness. That I did go through a phase of doubting myself. Like, have I slipped? Because I'm not, none of those things are happening. But it was a temporary phase, and I moved right on through it. But it didn't happen like right when they ended.
Yeah.
You know, so it wasn't as specific like that. But I did go through that. Like, nothing dramatic is happening. There's no visions. There's no scribing. There's no, you know, nothing wild and dramatic at all. But then I let that go. You know what I decided?
What?
Was just to be happy with being happy, or just to be happy with being, just to be happy with being, living, yeah, existing, and not even be concerned at all. Although I still love, one of my favorite times of the day is sitting over there on that purple sofa by myself in meditation and contemplation. I love that. But not even being concerned when that couldn't happen. Like in the last week, the last 2 weeks, you know, with people around and dogs around, you know, everything's different, right? So it's not happening. And that's great.
That's okay.
Exactly.
Yeah, you're not like, oh gosh, my practice is falling apart and I got to get back on the horse.
Right. In fact, my practice is right now. My practice is just right now.
And isn't it lovely?
Just being here with whatever is, as open as possible. And the reason I say as open as possible is because occasionally there's a close, and then just being with that until it opens back up again. And usually it actually opens pretty quickly. But if I expected pure openness all of the time, I would still judge myself.
Yeah, but pure openness allows for closeness.
Allows for closeness.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Just like wakefulness allows for sleep.
Yeah.
Just like an in-breath allows for an out-breath.
And that's what I call just being. Just being with whatever is, all the time. And since that's really what you're doing all of the time, to just be consciously aware of it is the only extra step.
Yeah, but I'll make a distinction here, because this is what oftentimes people totally misunderstand.
Okay.
This spiritual teaching, be with what is. So, because they're rooted in their physical sensory experience, they mistake what is to only be the things transpiring physically.
Okay.
Rather than that teaching is saying being with what is the isness,
yes,
of awareness or,
yes,
presence or being.
Yes.
And you can see that be with what is get really wonky in that reconditioned stage.
Yes.
Because then you need lots of mind justification about you're just being with what is.
Oh, yeah. I just not got
as
it.
Value, as though you're the experiences.
Yeah.
Not the experiencer. So being with what is being with the eternal I am-ness or is-ness, I call it spacious presence. So that's what that teaching is pointing to, be with what is. It's not suffer through the events of time and space.
No, it's be the openness that everything passes through.
Yeah, but people trying to create a behavioral thought-based matrix about how to be with all these things because they're still rooted only in their sense experience.
Because well, my interpretation of that, and this is my interpretation, admittedly, based on my own experience.
Oh, everything I'm saying is my interpretation.
But I would say that's because they're not yet aware of awareness. I mean, I distinctly remember the moment I became aware of awareness.
Oh, me too.
And before that, I couldn't have, no matter how much.
But you probably tried to create a thought-based imitation matrix.
Maybe. But I couldn't have been aware of it because I just... Just like I remember the day, you know, I don't talk about chakras, but somebody said it was my heart chakra. I remember the day my heart opened. You know, like I remember the day, and in fact, I even wrote that day in my blog, you know, what happened to me. Something changed, and I could feel it. It just opened up, and I now had the capability to love everything. And before that day, I didn't.
But that's to love everything, not through your old definitions of love.
No, just...
That's not through a mind...
No, because it...
A reconditioned mind about
no.
love. It's through a simple, intrinsic isness.
Yeah. Yeah, something shifted, something changed, something. It felt like something was there that wasn't there a moment ago, in my case, right? Yeah,
pretty sexy, isn't it?
Yeah, and so, yeah, and so this to me. Now you can tell me if you disagree because your experience is different than mine, which
isn't
I
isn't that cool?
Which I appreciate.
Yeah.
Yes. Yes. So this to me is what I call the value of spiritual practice, because in my experience, it was my commitment to my spiritual practice that somehow brought me to these two trigger points where the heart opened one day and where another day, a couple years later, I became aware of awareness. Right?
Yeah.
No, at least that's how it feels to me. Like the practice helped me to get there.
Sure, that stage of there are times when effort is necessary.
Yes.
But how we go about that effort is always a choice. Because when we're efforting to get something that the mind has placed more value on, there'll be an intrinsic suffering, because every movement of grasping is affirming a lack.
Yes.
Rather than I'm efforting to realize what is. Do you see what I mean?
I do.
And my pathway, Yeshua talks about this course, and says, this need not be painful, but it usually is.
Yes.
I focus on the, okay, show me this need not be. And he showed me the way on the need not be, because I wasn't arrogant that I would know the way. I had already discovered of myself I was just stupid.
Do you want to read what I wrote when I got to page 15 of A Course in Miracles, right here in the bottom?
I promise to let myself be led by love within, an experience of joy to be the full and complete realization of self. I had almost the same words.
Page 15.
Yeah, except I just said I'm stupid.
I'm stupid, leave me. But I like, even though I can't say I didn't suffer, I'd be lying.
Well, I had moments of suffering,
too.
I just didn't linger in them.
Exactly.
Or spiritualize them.
My purpose was always joy.
Yeah, I wasn't wearing them in public to get a spiritual badge.
And sometimes when I go back and read this page, I can't even figure out what on this page made me have that realization. I thought maybe there would be something here, but I have no idea. But page 15, so I didn't get very far into it before I decided that I wanted this to be joyful. And the funny thing is, again, you don't know me very well. Most of these people know
like
my stories.
I know you really
well. I mean, my stories.
Yeah.
They know my stories way better than you do. So, but I went through this relationship with Laurent, this when I broke up with Ron for a year and a half, and
to spare Ron the shit you needed to get
through. I guess so. I guess so. But you know,
I bet Ron appreciates it.
Yeah.
And great praise to Laurent.
Yeah. But from the, you know, from the worldly point of view, which is the best way to describe what the relationship was, this was the relationship from hell. I mean, you know, we just, everything about us was exact opposite, and we pushed every button there was to push in each other. I mean, the relationship from hell. But for me, it wasn't. And the reason it wasn't is because I wanted to heal.
So you could be joyful in that hell because you knew it was liberating.
That's exactly it.
Well, I really appreciate and applaud and congratulate you for doing it a year and a half. Cindy and I did like 2 decades.
You are snow. It's a slow learner.
Yeah,
slow learner.
So I don't mind it. Yeah.
Yeah.
I was slow learner until I got ready to learn, and then it was fast.
Yeah, well, see, my ready to learn came before, you know, so that's all. You know, I...
Can I ask you a question?
Yes.
So between where you said that your heart chakra opened up and
when
you said that you awoke to the awareness of awareness,
yes.
Do you not feel like there's an intuitive sense that kept you moving on?
Oh,
rather than just staying with how I see some people are content with the spiritual badge, as John Mark.
Yeah, no, I think intuitiveness has always kept
me
moving.
So did you know to actually move forward that there is, in fact, something else?
Yes. To this day, I still move forward.
Oh, yeah, there's still a magnet at work.
It feels almost
magnetic.
Yeah. The idea of stopping to me, you know, like, okay, I'm done.
It's laughable.
It's a silly idea.
Well, I don't necessarily mean that, but, you know what I mean, where a lot of people are kind of into the spiritual badge thing and they don't necessarily...
I always tell...
how to the forward thing that there really is something real. In the moving beyond that place.
Well, you know, I mean, again, everybody has a different story, but my story, as far as my conscious choice to be on the spiritual path, right? I mean, you always are, but this is a conscious choice.
Yeah.
It started with Peace Pilgrim.
Right. Right. I remember that. Yeah.
And what was interesting for me about Peace Pilgrim is she, to me, was a simple, everyday country girl. There was nothing special about her. Like, I could have put specialness on Jesus.
Okay.
Maybe if I'd even known J.M., just the way his persona is, you know, I would have put specialness on him. You know, he kind of dresses a certain way, you know what I mean?
Yeah.
But there was nothing special about her.
Yeah.
She was a normal, average person.
Like Forrest Gump.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, but, you know, but she knew, and again, she called it love. She knew love as a very real, in fact, the only real power in the universe. She knew that every one of us orbited from that, that that was our truth. And although I didn't have any way of comprehending what she knew at that time, I knew in my gut that she knew something real I didn't know.
Right.
And that's what started me on this, you know. So I didn't start to be special. I started just to learn what this simple lady knew.
Okay.
And I think that's a big difference. You know, the whole, I do think that there are people who start on this path to be special.
I had some of that, absolutely.
Yeah, that's part of the initial drive.
The ego comes to it to finally get the power that it's never found anywhere else.
Yeah, yeah. And so that would lead you down a slight, but I was after something simple but true.
Yeah, well, you were an introvert. I was an extrovert. I needed
That's
a reason.
That's true, too.
Sure, so.
That's true, too. Yeah. So.
Isn't it cool that, you know, our unique curriculums, and of course everyone's got their absolutely unique inner curriculum, it's just mind-blowing the wisdom that orchestrates all of that on all of our behalfs simultaneously. I just rest in, without needing to think about it, I can rest in an awe of that only by looking at my little one lifetime experience and just a couple people that I know and imagining that against all the beings on this world. Oh my gosh. I mean, you can become full of an ecstatic gratitude that's just amazing. And it's all given because love is its nature. Oh, wow. That's sexy.
Yeah. I'm just looking. It looks like, you know, people are definitely hearing us nice and clear, even though we're kind of spread out a little more. Usually I'm up here like this talking, you know.
In your radio voice?
Yeah. Do I have a radio voice?
No, this is it.
This is it. This is it. Well, we only have like a couple of minutes left, so, and then Jacqueline's going to come. Okay, I'll let go of the mic for a second and let Cheryl make some announcements or something. The real reason I'll do that is so that I can save this audio. And then Jacqueline will come and we'll have a movie group. And what I will do is I will move over to the sofa. You can stay right here.
Yeah, perfect.
Right.
On the hot seat.
You're not going to be nervous, right?
I'm not going to be nervous.
Right. Can I take a second and just say how grateful I am to be in your home?
Oh, thank you.
And how joyful it is to share this space with you.
Yeah.
And to share the joy of our journeys with each other.
Yeah.
And with these friends who are online. I'm just profoundly grateful for all of you.
Yeah, and it does just feel very natural to have you here. So,
yeah, it's
really, really nice.
I'll second that.
You know, second.
Yeah, thank you,
yeah, I'm glad you guys are here, and you know, Jamie's glad you're here too, even though you can't tell her right now. She's off in dreamland somewhere. But and Kathy says I third that. Yeah, and for those of you who were not at the Awakening Together retreat, I just want to say we really had a wonderful retreat.
Absolutely.
Yeah, and hopefully next year you'll be able to join with us.
Yeah, definitely helped my journey.
Yeah. So, I will let go of the mic then, and Cheryl, if you could just, you know, chatter in a very, very nice way, you know, like a very purposeful way, no, for about a minute. I need about a minute to save the audio. But then after that, Jacqueline will be able to take the mic. All right? Thank you, guys. Bye.
Bye. Play well, friends.
Bon voyage.
All right, we're not on the mic right now, and so let me stop the recording.